Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, bringing you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. I'm your host, Mark Levine, and today, assault weapons, semi-automatic assault weapons, are legal. So you can go out right now, go to your local Walmart if you want, buy yourself an AK-47, an Uzi, a Tech-9, and use it. It's been 10 years since these weapons have been legal, but they are legal again. George Bush, in the 2000 campaign, said he was against he was for the ban on assault weapons. He was for extending the ban on assault weapons, but he has flip-flopped in this regard, and now he is no longer supporting the ban. At least he's not taking any effort to support it in Congress. Both houses of Congress have majorities that are opposed to these assault weapons, and yet they've been allowed to expire because the Republican leadership of both houses does not want to bring it to a vote. I have two guests today to talk about the consequences of this ban being over. My first guest is Kelly Hobbs. She is a spokesman for the National Rifle Association, and she's going to tell us why we need these kinds of weapons, why these weapons should be legal. And then coming up in the latter half of the hour, we got Elizabeth Hale. She's a staff attorney for the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, and she's very much against these kinds of weapons. If you want to call in and ask our guests questions, I urge you to do so, as always. The number is toll-free, 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. You can call in, ask the tough questions, and let's find out. You know, some would say these weapons really aren't necessary. They're the kind of weapons that were used by the snipers right here in Washington, D.C., when they attacked in Virginia and Maryland and things like that. And in fact, Al-Qaeda trading manual specifically suggests that terrorists go out to America and buy yourself an assault weapons. But the National Rifle Association believes, and we'll hear from their spokesperson in just a few seconds, I think their belief is that the more people who own these kinds of guns, the less chance we'll have gun crimes committed. And that if we have more of these assault weapons on the street, then citizens can protect themselves from the bad kind of gun owners. But I don't want to put words in their mouth. I want you to hear from them directly. And so first I want to welcome Kelly Hobbs, the Inside Scoop.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on my show. Why don't you just give an explanation to our listeners why you believe someone would legitimately want to own an Uzi, say, or an AK-47.
Well, actually, Uzis and AK-47s aren't banned by this law. They're actually banned under a 1989 importation ban. They're still going to be banned next week. Those types of firearms aren't covered by this law.
Okay, Tech-9, then. Is that
Tech-9, actually, they don't make those anymore either.
Okay, well, you tell me, then. What becomes legal?
Under this law, and I know assault weapon, it sounds scary, and, you know, I agree, but true assault weapons were banned in the 1930s. These firearms are semi-automatic, and I know for many people that don't understand firearms, that term can be a little confusing. What it means is it's just a type of action. It means it's the way the gun functions, but it's no different than any other legal gun. You have to pull the trigger once, and it only fires once. You have to pull the trigger again to make it fire. And contrary to what I'm sure your next guest will say, these guns are used by sportsmen. They're used at the National Shooting Championship matches at Camp Perry. And they are used by hunters. They just lost a beauty contest. But the real reason why NRA doesn't support this law, it hasn't been effective. There have been countless government studies done on the issue, including the study mandated by the law, because this law was intended to be a 10-year experiment. So the Clinton Justice Department did a study and found that these firearms were rarely used in crime, less than 2%. And in fact, this law had not affected those numbers. This law was basically useless. So because I've said so many law-abiding citizens do actually own these firearms, we can only conclude that it's only affected them.
Okay, Kelly, I want to take this step by step because you said a lot of things, and I want to really go into each of your issues one by one.
Sure.
Your first has to do with what's been banned, and maybe you can explain to I do understand that foreign semi-automatic weapons are banned under the 1989 law, but an American-made weapon that is exactly like an Uzi would be allowed. Is that right?
I don't believe Uzi was actually covered under this law, no.
No, but if you had an American weapon that had the exact same look and feel? And I mean, it worked exactly
no,
like
No, I actually don't believe that is correct. I'm sorry.
Okay, tell me why you don't think that would be.
Because I'm looking at the list right now, and it's not named. It named a number of firearms and, you know, basically banned those guns and any duplicates of those.
Okay.
But Uzi and AK-47 were not. I think you're looking for an example, probably.
Well, give me an example.
Like an AR-15, a Colt AR-15.
A Colt AR-15, fair enough.
Or a Beretta AR-70.
Now let's talk about some gun terms, and you understand it better than I do, but let me talk how I understand it. You correct me if I'm wrong. A fully automatic weapon, another name for that is a machine gun.
Mm-hmm.
That was banned in the 1930s, and that's been banned consistently, and that's something where if you pull the trigger, you get just bullets streaming out without just one right after the other.
That's correct.
Okay. That's a fully automatic weapon. And then these are called semi-automatic weapons, which means that as you squeeze each trigger, a bullet goes out. Each
right.
time you squeeze a trigger. Okay. Now, one of my understandings, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, is mm-hmm. that one of the problems with semi-automatic weapons is that they're easily convertible to automatic weapons. Not legally, I understand that. But
highly illegal.
I understand that.
And I would always advocate that if that happened, and I don't believe it's very easy either, but if it happened, that person should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
Okay. So you don't think it's that easy?
Cause no.
It's not something that someone can just, you know, look on the internet and figure out how to do. You don't think?
If they can, they're a lot smarter than I am.
Okay. Now, what makes these weapons different from, say, your ordinary rifle? I mean, my understanding is most hunters don't take semi-automatic weapons to shoot deer. They take
a
rifle.
Oh, not true at all. In fact, I was just out using my semi-automatic shotgun the other day to shoot dove.
To shoot dove.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't a rifle have better aim with a long barrel?
No, you usually use a shotgun to shoot dove.
Okay, use a shotgun.
Yeah, rifles are typically used maybe for deer hunting.
For deer hunting.
Mm-hmm.
But wouldn't a shotgun or a rifle have better aim as a hunter, a better target, since you can sort of, you know, again, you know more about this than I do.
Well, a dove is moving. So a shotgun in the shell has shot little tiny pellets. And when you fire it, it sends out those pellets. So if the target's moving, it's actually a little better to use a shotgun.
So
I wouldn't be a very good shot if I don't think I could hit one if I used a rifle.
So the shotgun does or does not send out more than one pellet at a trigger?
Shotgun sends out numerous pellets.
Okay.
And you can get different sizes of shot so that it can send out different numbers of pellets.
And these
small pellets. Depending on what size, but
these shotguns are legal. Were legal before this ban ended today and after, right?
Right.
Okay. So, what would you use a Colt AR-15 for in hunting?
You could use it for deer hunting.
For deer hunting, and
mm-hmm.
what would that let you do that a rifle wouldn't let you do?
It is a rifle.
No, I understand.
It's no different. It looks different. It's black, and you know that's about it.
You're arguing there's no real difference other than the color? You're not really arguing that.
No, I am. Exactly it. And that's what makes this law so ridiculous.
Okay, I just want to get this straight because, I've got Elizabeth Hale. She's going to be on the second half
right.
of the hour. You're arguing that a Colt AR-15, other than its color, is no different from
your
a rifle.
Your grandfather's hunting rifle he used in the woods 100 years ago.
Okay.
No different. Doesn't
All right.
work any differently.
Well, I'm going to pose that question, obviously.
It looks different. And, you know, to people who aren't familiar with firearms, it doesn't have the pretty wood. It's black.
Okay.
And, you
but
know,
it's...
it looks like the scary Hollywood guns. But the fact of the matter is, it doesn't work differently. And I think the biggest point in this, and the reason why NRA is so adamant, you know, we have a lot of proposals at the federal and the state level, gun control laws, some of which we've supported. We support the National Instant Check System. To make sure that every time you want to go buy a gun, you have to go through a background check.
But you don't support closing what they call the gun show loophole.
Oh, no,
where...
we do.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, we do. We support background checks on all sales at gun shows. What we don't support is making those background checks 3 days. We have the National Instant Check System. They should be done instantly. They should be done as soon as possible.
Yeah, but my understanding is that some 95% of the checks are done instantly, are done as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only when you have the really, you know, strange cases, weird cases, that the Justice Department, in fact, has said they need up to 3 days to track some records for people
well,
who are
Well, the problem is the Clinton Justice Department had 5 years and a third of $1 billion to make sure that the checks could be instant, and they squandered the money. NRA has been on Capitol Hill every year trying to fight for more money for the national instant check system, and Pete, groups like the Brady Campaign keep opposing us. So
they oppose...
I hope you ask your guest in the next half hour why they keep opposing us to try to make sure that the national instant check system is instant.
I will ask the guest.
But the majority of checks at gun shows do go through the national instant check system, because if you are a gun dealer, which means you're in the business of selling firearms, you have to go put all gun checks through the instant check system.
Right, and does that instant check system work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week?
I believe that there are certain hours, and I, as a person who grew up going to gun shows, know that the gun shows aren't open in the hours that the instant check isn't open.
Yeah, oh, they're not.
No,
but because
as a person who grew up going to gun shows about every weekend, gun shows typically aren't open at 2 a.m.
Now, see, what I don't understand is it seems to me, from what I've heard from professionals in this matter, that it does, and again, that we'll get back to assault weapons in a second, but that it does take 3 days in some rare cases, like less than 5% of the time. And it seems to me that, you know, for those 5% of the time, gun owners might have to wait 3 days to find out that they indeed committed a felony or a gun crime in Hawaii, and that takes time to get to the system. I mean, that doesn't seem to me to be too much to ask, is it?
Well, if the gun show's gone, because the gun shows, have you been to a gun show recently?
Not recently.
No? Okay. Well, gun shows are usually held only on 2 days, Saturday and Sunday, held over the weekend. Certainly, NRA doesn't want any criminal to get a hold of a gun. That's why we're pushing for the money to make sure those checks are instant, so that we can say, let's have every single check at a gun show, since most of them are being checked anyway, but let's have every single one have a background check, and we want it to be instant.
Okay, I have a lot more questions for you, but I want to give my callers a chance. And if you want to dial in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Dial in. Here's your chance to question the NRA. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Kelly Hobbs. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Yeah, this is Hubert from Michigan.
Hubert from Michigan. What's your question for Kelly?
Well, I'm a goose hunter, and I got me an AR-15, and... Where can I pick up a tactical manual so I can fire down the cam on my selector switch so I can fire it on Boogaloo?
you're asking for a technical manual?
Right. I'm told I can just fire down the cam on my selector switch and I can give me automatic fire.
Well, I don't know if that's true. Kelly seems to suggest that it's not easy to make your weapon into an automatic weapon, and it's highly illegal.
Well, when I go hunting, we don't worry about legalities.
I understand. Well, thank you very much for your call. I mean, Kelly, I think the caller, I think, was probably putting us on. But
I think so, too.
But I
wouldn't recommend that he even joke around about that, because if a federal agent is listening, that person would actually be violating the law by, you know, and would probably be investigated if he intended to do that.
Yeah, no, I understand. Let me ask you this, though. You're a bit of an expert. I can see that. But the police, I would say, are a bit of an experts as well. And there's three police organizations, the International Association of Chiefs of Police, International Brotherhood of Police Officers, and the Fraternal Order of Police, that have all come out against ending the ban on assault weapons. They cite statistics that 1 in 5 police officers have been killed with these weapons that were banned, and that, in fact, the gun deaths have gone down as time has gone on since 1994.
Unfortunately, they've been giving some seriously inaccurate statistics. The statistics they've been given are from a group called the Violence Policy Center, who I know your next guest works very closely with. And what they've done, and, you know, I don't want to trivialize when an officer dies in the line of duty. That's horrible. But the statistics that they're citing, they used firearms that are not assault weapons. They used firearms that were not included in this law. And to skew the statistics to achieve what they believe would be something that benefited their cause. It's awful anytime an officer gets shot, but we have to look at the real statistics on this issue. We have to look at the statistics from the National Institute of Justice, from the study done under the Clinton administration on this law, which shows that these firearms are used in less than 1% of crimes, and that this law hasn't impacted that.
But, Kelly, it seems to me that what you're saying is that all these police organizations, and I assume that they have looked at these studies that you're citing.
I'm not sure that they have, to be honest.
They're all being fooled?
A lot of police organizations are very political in nature. I'm sure you're aware of that. It's great to have these organizations out there, and I know that a lot of their members are great people, but the leadership are often more tied politically than they maybe should be.
But you're arguing, in effect, that all three of these police organizations haven't carefully read the studies and
are
making mistakes.
I am arguing that because I think they would come to a very different conclusion than they have.
Let me ask you about some use of semi-automatic weapons, and again, you can tell me if I'm wrong. My understanding is that the snipers right here in Washington, D.C. area that were in Virginia and Maryland killing people at gas stations really scared.
I lived through it.
I was scared too. I remember I was at a gas station and I was looking around very carefully, ducking under things, and
it was horrible.
It was a horrible experience.
I'm glad that they were caught. They had a long record. It's unfortunate they couldn't have been caught sooner.
Didn't they use a weapon like one of these weapons that's becoming legal today?
Well, it would be interesting if they did, because that gun would have been banned, so I don't know. I actually am not familiar enough with the case to probably comment on it.
I read that in the Washington Post today, that they, in fact, had used one of these weapons. The other thing, use of these weapons, at least in general, as I understand, there was an Al-Qaeda training manual that urged its membership to, if they want to get weapons to fight in the United States, they can just go into a local store and buy assault weapons, and they were quite proud of that fact. Don't you think after September 11th that maybe we should be a little bit more careful about making guns, particularly these kinds of guns that can, you know, shoot fairly quickly, available to people like...
Well, they can't shoot any quicker than any other gun, any other semi-automatic gun. And I think we all can remember back to 9/11 that the terrorists were not using firearms. They were using airplanes and box cutters, yet we have this outpouring of a call for gun control legislation. It doesn't make sense to me, you know. And again, I want to remind you about the nation's gun laws. If you're not an American citizen, you can't buy a gun in the U.S.
Yeah, but how well do they check?
You have to go through a background check. I don't think Osama bin Laden is planning to come over and go to a gun store in Leesburg and buy a firearm. It just flies against common sense. What we do need to be vigilant, and I think what you actually saw after 9/11, is that law-abiding citizens, many of whom had supported gun control, went out and wanted to buy firearms. They wanted to protect themselves. They wanted to protect their families. And they wanted to be able to use the Second Amendment as they feel needed.
But as I understand it, these weapons are very different from, say, a handgun you might use to protect yourself at home. I don't know, is a Glock 19, is that the right weapon that would be made legal? Is that an example?
I don't believe that was under this law at all, no.
Okay, but what semi-automatic weapons do is they allow, you can just... Basically, as fast as your finger can move, you can pull the trigger.
No, that's not true.
No? Okay.
If you have fast fingers, you can do that with any firearm. These don't work any different than any other handgun. I think that's the huge myth out there. I'd love to bring you out to NRA and show you some and let you have a chance to fire one and see what they work like. Because there's a huge myth that these are, I'm going to use these horrible terms because they don't accurately reflect these firearms, but rapid fire. They're not. These are not machine guns. You can't fire it any faster, despite what groups have claimed, than any other gun out there. And I would love to bring you to NRA and so you could see one and you could see exactly what I'm talking about.
Well, I guess one thing I don't understand is the NRA clearly spends a lot of money on I think, $17 million or so on various political groups, about 10 times what the gun control advocates spend. And they spend, the last study I saw, not just NRA, but other gun advocates spend up to $30 million, more than 10 times what the gun control advocates spend. And yet, the latest polls I've seen show that a majority, 68% of Americans want to extend this ban, including 57% of gun owners, which really surprised me, and that majorities in both houses of Congress also want to see this ban extended, except that the Republican...
Well, I don't think that's true at all. In fact, in 1996, the House of Representatives voted to repeal this law. So I don't think you have a majority in the House of Representatives. You may have a slim majority in the Senate, and that's unfortunate.
There was a
52-47
vote.
What I can't tell you about some studies that you mentioned, that doesn't surprise me. You know, you and I are talking about this issue, and you don't seem to have a very good understanding of what an assault weapon is. I think you ask any gun owner, anybody, and you ask them what an assault weapon is, and they may not know either. either. What is an assault weapon? It's a term coined by anti-gun groups. This is not a gun term that has been around for 50 years. This is a relatively new term. I think if you asked those same people polled to define an assault weapon, you would get a variety of answers, and not very many of them would be accurate.
Okay, what is then, and we're going to go to commercial break and come right back, but what, before we go to break, what would you say is the difference? And I know I asked you this and you just mentioned the color. What else, if you will, differs the weapons that are becoming legal today from ordinary rifles and handguns?
There's no difference, and that's what makes this ban ridiculous.
Okay, well, we're going to come back and we'll also have a chance to take your calls. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. We'll be back with Kelly Hobbs, the spokesperson for the NRA, right after these messages.
Americans, U.S. corporations say that they are no longer offshoring our middle-class jobs. It seems that they've grown afraid of the rising public anger at this self-serving fattening of their already ample bottom lines at the expense of working families. They fear that there will be a political backlash from workers, customers, Congress, and plain old American patriots. Does this mean that greed-headed CEOs are no longer shipping our manufacturing, professional, and high-tech jobs to India, Pakistan, Russia, and other low-wage centers? Of course not. It simply means that they no longer say the word offshoring. Instead, the doublespeak artists of corporate PR departments have coined new euphemisms. Rather than offshoring, they now call it remote global sourcing, or right-shoring, to disguise the perfidy. A new report finds that offshoring, by whatever name, is not only continuing unabated, but accelerating rapidly and expanding into new fields. If you're an architect, if you do legal work or tax preparation, if you're an editor or radiologist, say bye-bye to your professional position, for CEOs are putting these and many more on a virtual boat overseas, with about 80% of the jobs going to India, where they can get the work done for a third or less than they pay to us Americans. The report, prepared by Forrester Research, says that offshoring is increasing dramatically. Forrester's previous prediction was that the U.S. would lose 588,000 jobs to offshoring by the end of this year. Now it estimates that 830,000 will be lost, a 41% increase. Nearly half of corporations surveyed say they're either offshoring jobs now or preparing to. Well, says one offshoring specialist, so what? Quote, it's free enterprise. We're trying to make money. Yeah, and so are bank robbers. This is Jim Hightower saying the proper word for what these CEOs are doing is not offshoring, it's stealing. They're stealing America's middle-class future.
What if I told you that you could get cash back from your federal student loans? No, really. You can receive up to $1,000 cash rebate just for making your first 6 payments on time. Introducing College Loan Corporation's Reward. Now you can save up to 50% on your monthly payments, lock in the lowest interest rates in history, and you may be able to earn a significant rebate. That's cold hard cash in your pocket. To take advantage of this amazing offer, call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. That's 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
The following is brought to you by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate.
So this morning, I'm looking into my shaving mirror, my wife's still in bed, and this guy is staring back at me with a mischievous glint in his eye. He looks familiar. So I say, Wild Thing? Is that you? You're back.
Not all medications are for everyone, so consult with your doctor first. Then ask if Viagra is right for you. To learn more, visit Viagra.com.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Assault weapons, or at least the kind that are named assault weapons in the law, they've been banned for 10 years since 1994. They are legal today. George Bush originally said he would extend the ban, and now he seems to support the ban going away. My guest is Kelly Hobbs. She's spokeswoman for the National Rifle Association, and she argues there's really no difference between assault weapons and ordinary guns and rifles that are used by hunters today. And we've been talking on the air. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Or you can do what so many of you have already done, and that is comment on the blog. Just go to www.radioinsidescoop.com, and you can make your comment, and I'll be reading some of your comments in just a moment. Kelly, tell me, why did George Bush originally support extending the ban, and do you think he's changed his mind?
I don't know. You'd have to ask him. We certainly don't speak for the White House, and we disagree with him on this issue if he does indeed support extending this ban.
Okay. Let me read to you some of the comments that I've gotten, because I've gotten a large number of them. I got a comment here from Jenny, and Jenny says, if the Violent Policy Center statistics are inaccurate, then please give people the name of the statistics that support your claims, meaning your Kelly's claims.
I'd be more than happy to.
Okay. Why don't you do that?
Okay. Well, first, we can go to the National Institute of Justice study. This was just done in July. I'm going to give you a website.
Okay.
You can go to www.sas.upenn.edu. And I would do a search on there. The author of the study was a gentleman by the name of Koper, K-O-P-E-R. And that's where you can find that study. Then the study that was mandated by the law was administered by the Urban Institute on behalf of the Clinton Justice Department, and that's at www.urban.org, and you backslash, it's uploaded PDF / aw_final.pdf.
I'll tell you what you can do also, Kelly, maybe after the show, is you can contribute to my own my blog as well. Go to the blog and put on the blog what those website addresses are, and that way anyone listening to this show or to the archive of this show can have them right there and can click on
them.
I do think this may end up being a battle of the studies. I know Elizabeth Hale, I'm sure, is going to cite her own studies.
I'm sure she will.
The two studies that I read in preparation for this show, one was the one that said that 1 in 5 police were killed by these kind of weapons. You're just saying that study isn't right.
That study isn't right. I'm saying that they used firearms that were not so-called assault weapons. And again, I don't want to trivialize when a cop is killed in the line of duty. It's horrible. But the firearms that they used to achieve that number are not assault weapons. They're not covered under this law. And it does make a difference.
And
I think you're probably going to cite another study done by, I think, the Brady campaign that said that there was a 60% drop in crime.
The study I was going to cite, and I got it on Yahoo, which I don't think is either pro-gun or anti-gun, it was from the Justice Department, which said that 4.8% of gun crimes used these weapons before the gun ban in 1994, and it was down to 1.6% this year, so that would be a two-thirds drop. That was the other study that I saw.
It was only 4.8, though, before?
It was 4.8 before.
I hadn't seen that, and that's interesting. I still would say that that's a fraction of crime.
Well, I think it is a fraction of crime.
It doesn't involve very many, and I know that a lot of these studies use what we call firearm traces. And I know that sounds good, like, well, great, you know, ATF is tracing firearms to crimes. That's not what a firearm trace is, and I'd love for you to get somebody from ATF on to tell you exactly what a firearm trace is. What they do is when they come across a firearm, for any reason, they might trace the line of commerce where somebody got that gun. Now, that doesn't mean that the gun was used in a crime, and in fact, most gun traces don't involve crime guns. So any study that says they got their statistics because gun traces went down, it can't correlate to crime guns.
Let me read you a number of comments on the blog I've gotten from one of my radio listeners called James, who supports your point of view, but is trying to help me out a little as he writes. Let me read to you. He had several posts, and they're all very interesting. First, he writes, the sniper illegally obtained his rifle. There was a restraining order on him, and he would not have been able to legally purchase any gun of any kind. That makes sense to me, James, but I think that shows part of the problem, that it's very easy. Even if you're not allowed to buy a gun in this country, it's still very easy, whether a gun show or any other way. My understanding is a sniper bought it from somebody else, and that it actually is still pretty easy, and it shows that these national instant checks really aren't working.
Well, they should be working. And what we've seen, actually, that they are working, but the problem, again, is that the money that was a third of $1 billion is a lot of money, and it should have been sufficient funds to make sure it was working properly. And I don't know what the Bill Clinton Justice Department did with that money, but they didn't use it all for the national instant check system. And NRA believes that we do need to put more money into it to make sure it works 100%. But I don't believe that the snipers went through a background check.
No, I don't think they did either.
And, you know, it is a problem, but I don't think banning these types of firearms is the answer to stopping people who have hate in their heart.
Kelly, let me ask you this, because I only got a few minutes left.
Sure.
I'll ask you two more questions. One, isn't it true, though, that the NRA I don't know. What is the NRA's position on people that have restraining orders? If a guy has a restraining order because he's threatened his girlfriend or his wife, I know it's illegal for that person to own a gun. What's
right.
the NRA's position on that?
Well, I think that they need to go before a judge. You know, I mean, nobody wants anybody who's violent or dangerous to have a firearm, that's for sure. At the same time, it's pretty easy to get a restraining order put on somebody. And we don't think just because a wife may be angry at her husband due to a divorce that she can just throw a restraining order, and then this man's Second Amendment rights are taken away. Now, of course,
if
the judge decides that this guy is a danger to his wife, we don't have a problem with that.
Just so I can understand, are you saying that if a woman gets a restraining order that the guy can't buy a gun unless he goes before a judge? Or are you saying that you would have her go and get a separate gun order?
No, what we're saying is that you shouldn't just be able to put a restraining order on somebody without that being validated.
Well, I happen to know.
You know, and the same goes, you know, let's say somebody put a restraining order on me just because they didn't like me. It's pretty easy to get a restraining order.
Actually, Kelly, this is something I do know about because I used to be a practicing trial lawyer, and I
mm-hmm.
actually handled some restraining orders. And if you show up and you argue it, you know, you get a hearing before a judge. If you don't argue it, if you don't question it, sure, you can just put a restraining order. But otherwise, the judge takes evidence that there's some pattern.
That's what we're asking. We want the judge to take evidence.
But that happens in any restraining order that's contested.
Well, that's what we want. We want if it's a contested, we think that person should have their rights until a judge determines otherwise.
Okay. Then I'm not quite sure why you'd oppose the current restraining order, but I only have a few minutes, really 1 minute left, and I do want to ask another question that James raises. Even though I think it's clear that he supports your position, I'm going to read some of his comments to our next guest in a minute, but he does say, Mark, let me help you out here. Ask Kelly how this ban would make folding stocks and large capacity clips more available. I believe this is the largest change that results from the expiration of the ban. Does this expiration allow you to have bigger gun clips, more bullets?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
And I can tell you this, according to the FBI, that's irrelevant to this debate because most crimes, only 3 shots are fired. So it's really irrelevant, but it's a good question.
Wait,
and
only,
it is true.
Only 3 shots are fired?
In most crimes, according to the
in
Federal
most crimes.
Bureau of
okay.
Investigation.
But basically, this would take, I mean, a handgun has, you know, a normal 6-shooter has 6 bullets. How many bullets can you have now in these new assault rifles that are legal today?
And the ones that are going to be legal,
what's
as
the
many
maximum?
As you want.
As many as you want.
Mm-hmm.
You could have 100, 200.
Yeah. But again, you know, I'd like you to point to the crimes where that's really been a factor. It's been very minuscule.
Well, I just would have to say that's a difference from, obviously, the color of a weapon. I mean, the fact that you could have 200 bullets in a magazine, it seems to me you could do a lot more damage than you could with a 6-shooter.
Well, you'd have to reload the 6-shooter. That is true.
A lot. It seems to me that, you know, if I were cops trying to track down somebody, I'd much rather he had a 6-shooter than...
You know, I think the same argument can be made, though. This has affected law enforcement. We need law enforcement to be able to protect themselves as well. And these firearms are ideal for not only civilian self-protection, but law enforcement.
And, again, if you're hunting, it shouldn't matter, really, changing the clip. Why does someone need a 100 clip?
If you're a law-abiding citizen, it shouldn't matter. Why should, as a law-abiding citizen, I have to justify that?
I guess,
go through a background check. I've been deemed a law-abiding citizen. I'm still going to be a law-abiding citizen.
I guess because these guns can be so easily bought illegally, I think it doesn't ask too much of a law-abiding citizen
again,
to change the magazine.
I'm going to post the studies on your site.
Okay.
They're not being bought illegally. They're not being used in crime. And that's where we need to focus this debate. We need to focus any good policy, whether it's at the federal level or at the state level, on affecting criminals. And the fact of the matter is this law has not, according to the numerous studies conducted by Congress.
Well, Kelly, you definitely argue very well for your side, and we're going to be hearing from the other side right after this commercial break. Thank you, Kelly Hobbs, for coming here on the Inside Scoop.
I really appreciate it. Take care and thank you.
Coming up right after this, this, we're going to hear from Elizabeth Hale. Elizabeth Hale is staff attorney for the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence. I'm sure she's been chomping at the bit, hearing all that Kelly had to say. And we'll hear if she's as an effective advocate for her cause as Kelly Hobbs has been. We'll be right back after these messages. Hey, if you want to call in, 877-57-SCOOP.
Bushites had no post-war plan for what they would do in Iraq after our military ousted Saddam? Think again. You can see their plan in the extremist economic policies that were quietly and autocratically imposed on the Iraqi people during the reign of L. Paul Bremer III, who was our occupying czar there. While America's media establishment has been focused on the raging war by Iraqi insurgents and by the Bushites' attempt to enthrone a puppet government there, the neocon laissez-faire zealots in the administration have been gleefully using this ravaged country as their own ideological playground. For years, these Ayn Randian theorists have longed to create their utopia of a corporate state, and they've used the IMF, World Bank, WTO, and other monkey wrenches to try to implement their theories in Latin America and elsewhere. But they've never had an entire economy at their disposal, until they grabbed Iraq. While Baghdad was burning, Bremer arrived. Rather than putting out the fires, he used them as a distraction to issue decrees that instantly opened up Iraq to a total corporate takeover. For example, his decrees open up all of that nation's public assets to foreign corporate ownership, and they allow 100% of the country's industries, from banking to food, to be owned by foreigners. Also, Bremer ruled that 100% of the profits that foreign investors make in Iraq can now be hauled out of the country. There's no requirement that any of these profits be reinvested there, nor that the investors have to pay even a dime in taxes on the profits they haul away. This isn't liberation, as the Bushites call their Iraqi adventure. It's legalized looting, and is fueling the continuing anger and armed resistance by the Iraqi people, who are determined not to have their nation looted. This is Jim Hightower saying, to get this full story, see Naomi Klein's explosive article in Harper's Magazine. You can read it at harpers.org.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Hello from the road, folks. You know, the only thing better than a twofer is a threefer. That's why this fall I'm staying at Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels. See, I get triple Southwest Airlines Rapid Rewards credit every time, so I earn flights three times faster. Call 800-4-CHOICE or visit choicehotels.com. We'll see you there.
Offer good for qualifying stays in the U.S. before November 30th, 2004. For details, visit choicehotels.com. Triple credit means 1.5 credits instead of the standard 0.5.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're discussing the end of the ban on assault weapons. Today, as of today, you can go out and buy a clip that has any number of bullets in it, according to Kelly Hobbs of the NRA. But she defended it, saying that these are not the kinds of guns that are used in crime. Well, my next guest, Elizabeth Hale, the staff attorney for the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, has had to sit patiently through all of the NRA spokesperson's interview, and I'm sure that she's chomping at the bit, ready to respond. I assume, right, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I just have to say, wow. I mean, the campaign of misinformation that the NRA continues to perpetuate on this is just unbelievable to me.
Well, go forth and tell me where she told you things that weren't true.
Well, first of all, since the NRA has been campaigning against this ban for 10 years, I find it surprising that she doesn't even know what the ban says. It specifically outlaws Uzis and AK-47s and Tech-9s among 19 types of semi-automatic assault weapons. So I don't know what she meant when she said it didn't cover that. It also, of course, bans
the manufacture or possession of large capacity magazines, and this means any clips that hold more than 10 rounds. So, yes, she is correct that starting tomorrow, you're going to be able to buy clips with 50 rounds, 100 rounds in them.
I did find it interesting because I asked her twice what the difference was, and all she could give me was a color. And I even said to her, you're telling me the only difference is a color? And she said, yes. And then one of my listeners pointed out that the high-capacity magazines.
Of course. She neglects to mention the high-capacity magazines, as well as the fact that, of course, there is a difference between hunting rifles and assault weapons.
Explain that difference.
Hunting rifles are designed for precision shooting. They're designed to be fired from the shoulder and have accurate, precise aim projectiles. Semi-automatic assault weapons are designed to spray bullets. You hold them at the hip. They have pistol grips, for instance, so that you can actually control it while it is firing wildly across many targets. They were designed for military use, not for civilian use.
So explain this to me. Can you fire it at the hip?
They're designed to be held at the hip using a pistol grip to be able to control it and just spray back and forth. And yes, it's true, because they're semi-automatic, that means you have to pull the trigger for each bullet coming out. But police have test-fired guns like Uzis and have emptied a magazine and a semi-automatic Uzi in 5 seconds.
How many bullets in one of those magazines?
In a 30-round clip, they emptied it in 5 seconds.
30
now,
rounds.
Granted, when it was
seconds.
Automatic, it emptied it in 2 seconds, but they were still able to empty it in 5 seconds in the semi-auto.
Now, how many bullets in a clip of an ordinary rifle?
Well, it depends. I mean, as of now, you could only use a clip up to 10 rounds unless you had what's called grandfathered. If you bought a clip or a gun or a semi-automatic assault weapon that was produced before the ban went into effect, you could still own and use that legally.
And just to give an idea for our listeners, you said that with a semi-automatic, you could shoot 30 bullets in 5 seconds.
Correct.
How long would it take to shoot 10 bullets out of a rifle?
I'm not as much of an expert on that as Kelly is.
Okay.
I imagine because you have to reload them, even if you are an excellent shooter, I imagine it takes you at least a few seconds to have to stop and reload. That's the police concern about these weapons here. With the availability of the large capacity magazines, criminals are able to continue spraying bullets at police officers, and police officers are not able to subdue them because there isn't even a few second pause while they have to reload. Just today, there were police officers in Miami who were shot. The shooter fired dozens of bullets. And they were not able to even have a few seconds to try and subdue that shooter while he reloaded.
The shooter that shot the police today, were they using, was he, I assume it was a he, usually is, using one of the banned weapons?
Yes, he was using an AK-47. I don't know if it was a legal grandfathered gun, or, but I'm assuming it was obtained illegally.
Okay, now Kelly Hobbs gave us a boatload of statistics. She's going to post a couple on my blog.
Mm-hmm.
I said this would probably end up being a battle of statistics, so let's go forth.
Actually, not even. This very study that she gave you the site for says that crimes using assault weapons dropped by 70%. So the very study that she was using to back up the NRA's misinformation actually shows that there was a very dramatic decline in the use of assault weapons and crime since this ban was passed. And it also points out that if the ban was extended, he would be able to draw more conclusions. But the fact that there have been grandfathered weapons in circulation for the past 10 years prevented him from drawing broader conclusions. But a 70% drop.
Yeah, that's pretty good. And obviously, after 10 years, you know, if it were 20 years, then the guns are more likely to not
fall
work
out of
after.
Yes.
Exactly. Now, one of my bloggers, and by the way, folks, if you want to contribute to the blog, just go to www.radioinsidescoop.com. Say whatever you like, and if there's time, we will ask your question on the air. Or you're always welcome to call in live, 877-57-SCOOP, toll-free 877-57-SCOOP. Well, one of my bloggers, James, says that I think he makes the argument that a lot of people in NRA make, that we need better law enforcement, that the ban did not keep the gun out of the sniper's hands, and maybe better law enforcement, gun law enforcement would. How do you respond to that argument?
Well, two parts. One is, as you discussed, the gun that was used by the snipers in the D.C. area sniper shootings is actually not a banned gun. However, they did obtain it illegally. The important thing to realize here is that, yes, of course, everyone is for better enforcement in capturing criminals after the fact. But that is just shameful, to say that we should allow the crimes to happen in the first place, that we should allow these guns to be out there to be used by criminals, and then just worry about locking them up after the fact. Police officers all over the country who are represented by not just the three groups you mentioned, but dozens of groups that came to the White House, that came to the Hill trying to get this ban renewed, they all want the ban renewed because it is them that are on the front lines. They have seen firsthand the effects of the use of these guns, and I think it's just shameful to say that instead we should just concentrate on getting the criminals after the fact, but allow them to use these guns first.
Well, one thing that Kelly said that surprised me a little bit was that she was supporting the national instant background check, which I think everyone then on both sides of this debate supports. And she said, and I couldn't believe this was right, she said that you don't support more money for these background checks?
No, of course that's incorrect. I mean, first of all, what we're dealing with the expiration of here is only the assault weapons ban. Nothing in the background check is affected. But if we're going to talk about that, the Brady campaign supports the instant background check. They support the use of background checks on every sale, but no matter how long it takes. As you pointed out, 95% of cases, the background check is done within minutes. 5% of the time, the checks take longer than that. They may take a few hours or a few days. And it's because in those 5% of times, those are the cases where there are more files to check, because those are the cases where there's usually a problem in that person's background. That 5% of cases are 20 times more likely to uncover a felony. So we want the background checks to take place no matter how long they take, whereas the NRA's position is they're only for background checks if it is absolutely instant. And in many states, that's just not possible because of the way their records are kept. They're kept by paper records, and it's not possible for them to be instant.
I do think that's a very strong point, that 95% of the time, this three-day limit doesn't matter at all. The gun owners can get their gun, and that in the remaining 5%, there are a lot more criminals than in that first 95%. Let me go to the phones, because someone's been waiting to ask you a question. Again, if you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Elizabeth Hale. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Hi, I'm Michael from Alabama. I've called before. I just wanted to say that the whole thing about pistol grip and spraying, shooting from the hip, you know, the rifleman on television didn't have a pistol grip, and he used to shoot from the hip. And I've got semi-automatic rifles that they're a lot easier to shoot from the hip without a pistol grip on it than it is with the pistol grip. I think that's just a design feature. And yes, the extended clip, if you buy a 50-round magazine to go into a gun, it's a lot bigger than what you're ever going to use hunting, because hunting you only use a 5-round magazine. But if you're just plinking, just shooting targets, it's a lot nicer to have a 50-round clip than it is to have a 5-round, so you can just shoot and shoot and shoot and not have to keep reloading. And I've got a 22 pump, is perfectly legal, that'll hold 18 rounds if you load it with a 22 short bullet instead of a long rifle bullet.
Well, Mike, let me ask you this. If you're hunting, not shooting targets, but going hunting, is there any real reason why you would use these weapons that are legal today rather than
a
rifle?
I have a Ruger Mini 14, which some people call it a combat assault rifle, and I hunt with it.
And why do you hunt with it rather than...
I like it. I like the weapon. I like the way it shoots. I hunt with a 5-round clip in it, but I have several 30-round clips. But, It does not have the combat grip. You can get a kit to put the combat grip on it, but I don't like that.
Okay, fair enough. Let me give Elizabeth a chance to respond. Elizabeth?
Well, with all due respect, I understand that it may be more enjoyable to use a 50-round magazine, or it may be more enjoyable to hunt with your Ruger Mini, but I don't think that just that enjoyment is enough to continue to put our law enforcement officers at risk.
I mean, Michael, couldn't you hunt?
I have friends who are police officers,
yeah,
and I go shooting with them, and I have several friends that legally own fully automatic weapons. They have the license to own such.
Because they're in the military or something?
No, as a civilian, you can get licenses that will allow you to do that, and it's perfectly legal to do. And this is not a hunting weapon. This is just a sport weapon. And my friends that are police officers and I, we go out shooting, and some of these guys, they bring those weapons when they go shooting, and it's perfectly legal.
I wonder, though.
Police officers are there, and they're not upset about it. Sometimes they're like, "Hey, wow, can I see that?" So they look at the weapon.
I wonder, though, Michael, you're in Alabama. You're at, in a...
I can understand it.
Are you in a fairly rural area in Alabama?
No, I live in a very populated area, part of Alabama.
Okay.
Do you live near Birmingham, where there was a major shooting where three police officers were killed with an
SCS? No, I don't. I live in Huntsville.
Okay. Are you familiar with that happened?
The second largest city in the state.
Are you familiar with that situation where the police officers were gunned down by semi-autos?
No, I wasn't familiar with that, but I was familiar with the two officers in Athens, Alabama, that were shot by a person that had some mental stability problems who shouldn't have had the gun, but he got it illegally, and that happens. I think that's why if they could have a much more rapid way of deciding if it's legal for you to purchase a handgun.
I agree with you. Yeah, and that was a horrible situation. But another way that you can make it more difficult for criminals or people who are mentally unstable to obtain these rifles is to reduce their availability. But instead,
oh, yeah,
we are now going back the other way and increasing
but
their availability.
If you cut off the hands that are shoplifted, that would be a way of more limiting it. But you know, some things are just too extremes, and I think that we should be able to legally purchase these weapons.
Yeah, but I guess the question is,
legally purchase it.
I guess the question is, you know, what do these extra weapons give you? Clearly, they allow someone. And I remember when I lived in Los Angeles, there were two bank robbers who had.
Oh yeah, that was horrible.
Who had assault weapons?
They were wearing body armor also.
Yeah, they were wearing body armor and all that, and
they
went
had
in
more
and
firepower
and
than local police officers. If the police officers hadn't been limited to that band, they could have ran into a sporting goods store and grabbed a weapon that would have stopped those guys.
I would argue that anyone in the military or a police officer should be allowed to own these guns.
Yeah, I don't know
that.
Yes, but I'm not sure about the police officers. I think, you know, they should not necessarily be armed with such powerful weapons. Now, police officers around here, I don't know. It depends. When I say police officers, I mean everybody in law enforcement. I'm not specifically talking about police, but deputy sheriffs and such like that. Some of them can carry the higher capacity weapons if they own it as a personal weapon.
And I think you're pointing out some very important points that we should discuss here. I mean, your caller rightfully points out that he owns certain types of, perhaps they're grandfathered, semi-automatic assault weapons. That just goes to show you that for law-abiding citizens, that nobody has come around and tried to take their guns away because of this ban being in place. And so there is no reason to have the ban lifted except for just to increase the availability to criminals.
That's an extreme argument that people are going to come take your guns, because if it could happen, and maybe in the future sometime if we're not diligent, it will happen. But this law is not going to do that, but I do think that if we had the more rapid background check, I don't think that it would be necessary to ban specific weapons. And I can tell you, I can shoot just as fast with a revolver, my wheel gun. I got a .38 revolver. I can shoot just as fast as my buddy can with his 9mm.
I think the difference is, Mike, is that maybe you are more familiar with these guns. You can do it, but I would think that the average person who wants to run out and commit a crime probably doesn't have
that kind of
experience.
I bet in one day's training, you can shoot a .38 and reload a .38 just as fast as you can shoot and reload a 9mm.
Just as fast as you can, you don't need to reload one of those with 100 bullets.
Well, yeah, but a 9mm is not going to have 100.
Well, but that's my point.
You may have 18, but I tell you what, it's the difference is a couple half seconds.
Okay.
If you practice with it, and if you own a weapon, you should absolutely abide by all your local laws, and you should practice with it, because if you own the weapon, you need to be proficient with it.
Mike, thanks very much for calling into the Inside Scoop.
Have a good day.
So, Elizabeth, you've heard from someone who likes guns and who owns them legally. How do you respond to Mike?
Well, as I pointed out while he was speaking, obviously he's been able to own the guns that he wants legally. Nobody has come and tried to take his guns away while this ban is in place. This ban is just absolute common sense logic, with law enforcement all across the country behind it, with 60 to 80% of the American public, including across all demographics, Republicans and even gun owners, like you pointed out, being for it. There is no rational reason to not continue the ban.
I also think there's a difference in gun culture between somebody in Huntsville, Alabama, and somebody in Washington, D.C. or New York City, where we see these guns used with drug gangs and things like that.
Well, that may be true. But I think it's important to point out that no matter where you are, people agree with this ban. I was talking to the caller about a horrible incident in Alabama where police officers were gunned down, and we had one of their colleagues was up on the Hill speaking. He says, I'm a gun owner. I'm a Republican. I own guns. I'm all for that. But there is no need for these type of guns to be so available to the public.
It was interesting to me that Mike was saying that mostly he wanted to use them for, you know, the pleasure of shooting at targets. If he's so good with these other guns, it seems to me he can go hunting with the other ones. I do want to read to you some more comments from the blog. James has been writing a lot, and his argument is that it's like drugs, that we're never going to keep – making something illegal doesn't keep it out of the hands of criminals, is James' argument. And just as people get drugs, people are going to get guns.
I understand that makes sense. However, you have to think about the fact that criminals do not make these guns out of thin air. They do not appear on trees. Criminals get these guns because they're available at gun shows and gun dealers, and they are trafficked by gun traffickers. If you make the guns less available, like this ban has done, the number of guns out there declines, and eventually criminals turn to other types of weapons, or it is more difficult for them to obtain weapons.
Let me read a comment by Jenny, who's on your side, and she writes, actually, being a deer hunter in my younger years, there were less people hunting in the woods. Today, woods are full of people hunting. Being allowed to have the weapons that she mentions, meaning you, Elizabeth, unlimited round rifles, undoubtedly creates a greater risk of death in woods. A lot of people that miss shooting a deer the first time continue firing until either they hit it or their clip is empty. Now all we need is an unlimited clip round to be fired in the woods during hunting. Seeing how one could fire 100 rounds within seconds, great. Not only would the deer be mutilated, unfit for eating, anyone near the area would also be.
It's so true, and police officers have also pointed out the same example, talking about using these for self-defense, people who say they want them for self-defense. In fact, that's very dangerous and doesn't make any sense, because the military rounds that these guns use go through walls. And as your blogger pointed out, people tend to empty their clips. So we're talking about dozens, if not hundreds, of rounds going out.
They go through walls?
Yes.
Bullets can actually go through? Are these bullets different from the ones that were banned before? Is
that changed? Well, they can take military rounds, and the police officers have pointed out that it is not the type of gun that you would want to use for self-defense.
Okay, explain this to me, because I don't understand it, and if I don't understand it, probably some of our listeners don't. What is a military round? How does that differ from an ordinary bullet?
Well, the executive director of the Fraternal Order of Police has explained that an AK-47, for instance, takes a military round. I don't know what the technical differences are between a military round and a round that would go into, say, a hunting shotgun. Maybe your callers could explain the difference to us. But he pointed out that in a conventional home with drywall walls, it could go through several of the walls and strike bystanders or your family members.
But I guess my question is that new to today, now that the weapons ban is over, or is that something that would have happened, could have bought a year ago, 2 years ago?
Well, because of the fact that the clips and the guns were grandfathered, you may have been able to obtain some of these throughout the past 10 years. But now they're going to be remanufactured. There'll be an influx of them, and they'll be able to be possessed again.
So this is another real difference then. These new military rounds can be sold legally in stores where they couldn't have been for the last 10 years.
Right.
Okay, now we've got one listener here, James Aram Tecumseh Sinclair. I like this listener just because I like his name. He talks about the Chris Rock idea. You allow weapons but charge a lot for bullets. Wouldn't someone think twice if each bullet cost $100? I've heard that before, James. I always thought that was a good comment when Chris Rock said it. Liz, I gave Kelly a chance to mention some studies, some resources. Why don't you give our listeners a chance? Where can they go if they support your view or they want more information on the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence?
Well, if you want more information, for instance, on the polling, pretty much every news outlet, Wall Street Journal, ABC, et cetera, has done polling and support for the ban. If you check out our website at stopthenra.com, we have links to a study called On Target, which found a 66% decline in the use of assault weapons and crime since the ban was put in place. But like I said, the one that Kelly is posting, the National Institute of Justice study, shows, in fact, that there was a 70% drop in the crime rate using assault weapons. So, you can read that, and it actually backs up my point.
Okay, though James, who's written several comments on the blog already, says that it's not true what you said about the rounds, that you could still buy these rounds before the ban.
Right, like I said, if they were grandfathered, you would have been able to find them. Unfortunately, the manufacturers, before the ban was put in place, pumped out literally millions and millions of extra high-capacity magazines so that they would be available even after the ban passed.
Let me ask you a political question, if I can. I only got a couple of minutes left. And that is that many people say or argue that the reason Al Gore lost West Virginia, Tennessee, Arkansas, states that were very close and that would have certainly made a difference in the electoral count if it hadn't been for the Supreme Court in Florida, they argue that it's because of gun laws, that because Al Gore took fairly strict positions on gun control, he lost the election. And some argue that Kerry should be careful, even though he's generally a gun control advocate, be careful of talking about this too much. Do you agree with that?
No, I disagree. I think that the power of the NRA has really been overstated, and that Bush in this instance has made a serious miscalculation in aligning himself with the NRA instead of on the side of the lives of innocent citizens out there. Because when you look at the polling, like I said, 70-80% of the American public, including the majority of gun owners and including the majority of Republicans, are for this ban. So the power of the NRA on this is a myth, and I think that Bush is going to see that he's made a serious miscalculation come Election Day.
Elizabeth Hale, thank you very much for coming here on the Inside Scoop. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, we only got a few seconds left. I want to tell you what's going on the rest of the week. Tomorrow, Todd Feinberg, conservative talk show host, is going to get his revenge. I went on his show last week, and he's coming on my show tomorrow for Election Tuesday. And we decided to mix it up a little bit. We always have Tom Robbins. Now we're going to use Todd Feinberg, conservative talk show host, argue the political points of the day, and, of course, take your calls. And then Wednesday, we have a very interesting debate. It's going to be a debate between two fundamentalist Christians, both PhDs, both experts in their field, and the argument is over the Christian right. Is it Christian, and is it right? And one of my guests, Dr. Dwayne Pellebaum, argues that the Christian right really isn't very Christian at all. That my other guest, Dr. Sinclair, strongly disagrees. In any case, that'll be a very interesting debate on Wednesday. No show Thursday or Friday. That's Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish High Holy Day for me. And then we'll be back on Sunday. But I hope you'll tune in tomorrow and Wednesday for more of the Inside Scoop.